Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
It's Friday, March 9th, 2018. Glad to have you along for this edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast, coming to you from the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Today, we'll have a review of the Texas primary, first primary in the country, and we'll speak with Elena Schneider of Politico. That's in a few minutes. But first, we're going to chat with Billy Ball. He writes for NC Policy Watch, and he had a pretty big story last week. It alleges some sexual misconduct by a third-term House member in the North Carolina House, Dwayne Hall. And here to chat about that piece and various elements of it is Billy Ball. Billy, welcome to the podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Billy, it's been more than a week now since the pieces came from Policy Watch, these pieces alleging sexual misconduct from Representative Hall. If you would, give me just a sense of the reaction that you've received broadly and or on a one-to-one basis following on this piece.
You know, Jeff, there was a very swift reaction, at least to the from the party side of this. We began speaking to party leaders in the Democratic Party just before, in the days before publishing, and they notified us very quickly that they intended to have statements to make and real statements to make about Representative Hall and to include in our story. And those included calls for his resignation from the House Democratic leader, Representative Darren Jackson. We also saw the same call from the party chair, Wayne Goodwin. It wasn't long. It all happened pretty quickly, but it wasn't long after we published, I believe, that Governor Cooper was calling for that resignation as well. We've seen many other Democrats and Republicans as well who have issued condemnations. We have seen newspapers like the Charlotte Observer have called for his resignation. There has been a very swift, and in many cases strong reaction to the stories that we're hearing here about Representative Hall. So certainly people had a quick reaction, and I think we're coming some months after the Me Too movement first started. People are perhaps more prepared to talk about these issues now than they might have been a year or two ago, and ready to say what they have to say about the issues. I think that played a part in the swift reaction that we were seeing here.
Billy Ball is talking to us on the line. He is in Charlotte at the moment. I'm in Durham. This is, of course, the WUNC Politics Podcast. I would add, I guess, just one personal wrinkle or note. I did a story about sexual harassment that ran back in December, and the two most egregious, I mean, it was about the culture at the General Assembly, and it was about two specific egregious incidents, but both of those incidents were well in the rearview mirror. One, if I'm doing it off the top of my head, from 2004 or 2005, and one from 2007. What I heard from some people afterward was, well, clearly your story shows that there isn't a problem at the General Assembly anymore. To which I had to fight a bit of an eye roll, because I've been in that building and I've seen enough and heard enough to know that it certainly has not gone the wayside. You talk about shining light on the current challenges and problems, and I think that this piece certainly drives that conversation forward. I do want to ask you about the issue of a personal relationship Dwayne Hall had and the choice by Policy Watch not to disclose that in the initial piece. This was a romantic relationship, from what Hall has indicated and what we understand, with Megan Glazier, who works as part of y'all's organization. She is the daughter of Rick Glazier, who is a former colleague of Hall's in the North Carolina House. He now is the executive director of the Justice Center, which is the parent organization of Policy Watch. You all chose not to disclose that as part of this piece. I'm wondering, you as the reporter, as you're leading up to publish, were you for or against disclosing that relationship?
You know, I'll be honest that I was on the fence about it before we published, And it was, I know Rob Schofield has mentioned this in discussing the issue in the past, that it was a very difficult decision because it involved potentially, raising up a coworker, a colleague's personal life, when this colleague is not involved in this story. And let me make one thing clear, that if she was involved in this story, absolutely it would have been disclosed. Considering that all of these other stories that we were working on, that we were looking at involving Representative Hall, in the end, the decision was made not to have a disclosure. In hindsight, I understand the optics. I'm no fool. I understand that the optics can be uncomfortable. But again, it was a very tough decision. But let me also say that quite frankly, I think it's a distraction. I think it's a distraction from the seven men and women who told their stories of their interactions with Duane Hall, who told these stories to me quite independently of any relationship that I have with anyone at the Justice Center. This is a story that I led for many weeks. I think I've said before that I've been looking at sexual harassment in the legislature and kind of following up on some of these stories that you, as a reporter who works over there, you certainly hear the same sorts of stories that I do. And I've been following up on some of them and trying to see if any are credible or not. And these stories that came out about Duane Hall during that process, they were credible to me. They were backed up by credible folks who witnessed these events, and they were willing. Some of them were willing to talk about it with their names involved, but some of them were not. And this is another piece of this that I hope that we're able to, that I hope really comes from this story, is that we understand that women who work over in the legislature are, if they have experienced something that was inappropriate or offensive or some kind of harassing behavior, they're often very afraid to use their names because they're afraid that it will impact their careers in a very negative way. And I don't think that they are mistaken in believing that it will impact them and that they will also, not to mention the social media trolls who tend to go after the female accusers and instead of the male accusers in these stories. It's a real thing that we see. They become the target, and there's certainly a difference between how women and men seem to be treated when these stories come out. So there is a real, and I think other reporters will attest to this as well, there's a real stigma associated with women who speak out on these issues. And I think if there's one thing that I hope comes out of this, it's that we're able to talk about that stigma and why it exists and what we can do to make it so that women don't have to come to a reporter like me and tell their stories about how they were afraid to speak to someone who was in this very powerful position, who might or might not have been using their power in such a way as to manipulate or to sexually harass them. So I do hope that's something we're able to talk about this. And I think I hope we don't get too distracted from that.
Finally, what do you think comes next with Hall and also with this larger issue? What's going to happen next here in this Raleigh political sphere?
I don't think that this is the last time that we'll be talking about sexual harassment in the General Assembly. That would be naive. Again, I think other reporters would say who've been over there, like yourself, that we don't believe that this is a one-person issue. This is not limited to, if these allegations about Duane Hall are true, which I believe these stories are very credible, if they are true, then I don't believe that this is limited to one representative. I think there have certainly been comments over the years that have gone beyond the pale that legislators have made. And you brought up in your story, I know you brought up the David Ahmen story, if I recall correctly.
That's correct. Yeah.
These are, this is a bipartisan issue, and I don't think it's going to go away. I think that we're going to hear from more people who have stories to tell, and I think there's certainly going to be a renewed emphasis on looking at the process over at the legislature. You know, there are options to go to the Legislative Ethics Committee, which hasn't been meeting at all or conducting much business at all in recent years, or you know, for if you are a legislative aide who wants to make a complaint in the legislature right now, consider that if there was a legislative aide who wanted to make a complaint against someone like Representative Hall, they would have to go to the Speaker of the House and make that complaint, and consider the reality of the fact that this is probably a person who might be working for the opposing party, having to go to the Republican Speaker of the House and say, hey, a Democrat or whoever sexually harassed me. I think people can understand why that would be a deterrent, you know. And also there's a lack of confidentiality associated with this as well. So there's a lot of fear, and I think that people are going to start taking a closer look at this process, and I think we'll see people calling for some changes in that policy process. I know we've already seen that so far with the Democratic Women's Caucus. So I hope that we'll hear more of that talk and a frank discussion of this issue.
Billy Ball writes for NC Policy Watch. He broke a story last week alleging sexual misconduct, unwanted innuendo, and forced kissing by three-term Wake County House Democrat Dwayne Hall. Billy, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I want to be an old
woman. Hi, I'm Kamara Thomas from Durham. This is one of my songs that's in the mix at WUNC Music. You can hear that song and discover lots of other great stuff on WUNCmusic.org.
Listen online and at 91.5 HD2.
And Mary, around here, men just don't make pies. Yes, my husband-to-be had committed the grievous error of showing up at the Hamilton Family Thanksgiving bearing homemade apple pies.
Join us for true stories about women. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Sunday evening at 7 o'clock.
Welcome back to the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. The first primary of 2018 took place this week on Tuesday in Texas. For some analysis now, we turn to Elena Schneider, a congressional reporter with Politico. She and I spoke via the phone line on Thursday, and I started by asking her what her big takeaways were from the primary in the Lone Star State.
So there are a couple of things that stand out to me. First of all, the trend that we've seen in Virginia and New Jersey in state special elections, state legislative special elections throughout 2017 and early 2018, so Democrats are excited to vote, and we saw that continue throughout Texas. There was a huge turnout. It was up from what it was in 2016 primary turnout. So these are all signs that Democrats are activated, enthusiastic, and that is something that Democrats should take heart in going into 2018, because typically in midterm years, that's when it's tougher for them to get their constituencies out, and clearly they're interested in voting this cycle.
You
so
said
that's one big takeaway.
Sorry. You said turnout up. We're talking 2, 5, 15 points. How much was it up?
So, the exact numbers, so from 2014, it was about 500,000 people voted. And in 2014 being the last midterm, primary midterm, and in 2018, it was about 1 million. So basically doubled over 2014.
Wow. Okay. Anything that North Carolina politicos, strategists, lawmakers, campaign managers, so on and so forth, that they can glean from results, from themes or things that are happening in Texas this week that may be applicable here in another southern state?
Well, I think that right now it's a little tough to say, because so many of the races out of Texas went to primary runoffs. So nobody was able to reach the 50% threshold in Texas. If you fail to do that, then it goes to the top two vote getters in a primary, and then they will face off on May 22nd. So we're still not totally clear yet on answers as to like what kind of Democrats are coming out of these races, who's succeeding. But as far as notes that, people in North Carolina can take from this. Money isn't everything. It's certainly something that we saw coming out of Texas, especially the Democratic primaries, and even in some Republican primaries, too, that telling a good story, being a good candidate, those are going to be just as important in races and in primaries and being able to stand out to voters as having a lot of money to communicate that message. It still has to be a message that resonates. So, for example, we had three Democratic primaries in contested, what will be contested general election races, and the three candidates who raised the most in those races, or were at least the top two fundraisers in those races, not only did they fail to make the runoff, but they all landed in fourth. So I think it's just a reminder to everyone that the candidate matters, that the authenticity of the message you're trying to sell matters to primary voters, and that money isn't everything at the end of the day.
And to your point, there were several well-funded men, white men, maybe a more traditional candidate, that didn't emerge first or second in some of these races on Tuesday night. Let me ask you about the Trump rhetoric. If you would, give me just a sense of what it was there leading up to these this first primary in Texas on both sides, the Republican and the Democratic side.
Well, so on the Republican side, it's pretty straightforward. There wasn't a lot of daylight amongst people on their policy issues or on their positions on Trump. Texas is still it's obviously a red state. It's a place where Trump is still pretty much popular at this point. He's somewhere in the mid-40s, 50s approval rating. So somebody that is not going to be super divisive, at least in a primary setting for Republicans. So in those situations, it was mostly sort of the personality of the candidate, their resume, that really was what they tried to use as separating themselves, not so much on Trump. On the Democratic side, it was obviously the total opposite. In a primary where people care about Trump and care about how people are going to fight against him in Washington, they did talk a lot about Trump and about how their backgrounds would uniquely position them to take him on. But like I said, even those candidates who were very strident against Trump, take Ed Meyer. He's a Democrat, a former State Department official from the Obama years, raised a lot of money for his race, and all of his TV ads were centered on taking on Donald Trump. But that message didn't really resonate. It was two other candidates who both talked about Trump, but maybe not as intensely. They were the ones who actually went on to the runoff. So I think that there needs to be a lesson maybe out of this is being able to link your frustration as a candidate, especially on the Democratic, obviously on the Democratic side, to a message or to a policy issue that you care about as well, that it has to be part of a larger story, that being a one-trick pony of just sort of anti-Trump may not be enough to get you through a primary at this point.
Were there policy issues that emerged as being the leading ones, be it the economy or firearms or Me Too or, how folks handled the hurricane? What was it that folks were talking about most frequently?
Well, to be honest, a lot of people were talking about Trump. But in addition to that, there was certainly a conversation about health care. There was a lot of, at least on the Democratic side, there was a lot of focus on Medicare and Medicaid. There was obviously the response to Hurricane Harvey and the flooding there in Houston. There was also some talk about guns. This is all happening in the shadow of Parkland, Florida, so there was at least one ad about gun control. On the Democratic side. On the Republican side, it was very much about immigration and the border, focusing on strengthening that, building a wall. So it's pretty traditional, down-the-line sort of party topics that people are interested in talking about that aren't too surprising, but just obviously the way that those messages are delivered can be more effective depending on the candidate vehicle.
Texas in the same camp as North Carolina, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, in states that did not expand Medicaid. So certainly something the Democrats there are still talking about as well. Alayna
right.
Schneider is your guest, one of your guests here on the WUNC Politics podcast. You can follow her on Twitter at EC_SCHNEIDER. Alayna, there's been plenty of talk about this being the year of the woman. Any clues from Tuesday in the Lone Star State as to how true that may be?
It's definitely panning out in Texas. So Texas has now probably two new congresswomen who are both won their Democratic primaries and in relatively safe Democratic seats, so it's likely that they will go on and be elected to members of Congress. And they're both women, and they're both going to be the first Latinas to represent Texas in Congress. So that's history right there was made on Tuesday. So, but they weren't the only ones. There were Democratic women who won all over. And in a lot of these runoffs, it's going to be two women running against each other. So clearly, they are having, female candidates are having a moment here in Texas, as they are in lots of places across the country.
A lot of what we've been talking about are, you know, the cookie cutter districts, the puzzle pieces within this giant state, as you mentioned, a red state. Isn't it something like no Democrat has won a statewide race in Texas in like 28 years or 30 years or something like that?
I think the last one was 1994 statewide, and last major for governor, I think, was 1988,
okay,
if I'm remembering
so
correctly.
So, a while back. Briefly, Senator Ted Cruz, former, of course, candidate for president, has a challenge on the left. Is there any reasonable evidence that he's in danger here?
I think it's still early to say, but at this point, at the end of the day, Republicans are still dominant in Texas statewide. When you look at Democratic turnout, obviously it was up. It doubled from 2014 midterm participation, but Republicans still, about 500,000 Republicans, more Republicans showed up than Democrats, even in a primary setting like this. So it just shows you Democrats have a long way to go. They have the demographics are on their side and sort of trending that way. But at this point, it's still likely that Cruz is going to get through his election against Beto O'Rourke. But certainly O'Rourke is going to put up a fight, and he's been incredibly well-funded. He's somebody who's super popular among the grassroots. He's really cut a national profile, drawn a lot of support from all across the country. So I think that he's certainly going to be out there. He's not going to sort of let him cruise by, no pun intended. But I think Cruz, nonetheless, is going to be able to most likely walk away with this one in a couple of months.
Cruise by. I get it. I like it. you are a North Carolina native, so an important question to end on here. Texas brisket or North Carolina vinegar-based Q?
Oh, my God. Of course North Carolina vinegar-based.
All right.
I only eat tacos when I go to Texas.
What kind of tacos?
All kinds. I particularly love their breakfast tacos. I would never. I save all my barbecue eating for Winston-Salem.
All right, fair enough. Elana Schneider covers campaigns for Politico. Thank you for the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
That will do it for this edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Subscribe on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is you procure those podcasts. Feel free to give us a rating or review there as well. And if you like the podcast, pass it along to a colleague, neighbor, friend, whomever. For Billy and Elena, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk next week.